Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Today's Issues, the name of this program. I'm Tim Wildman, and Walker Wildman is with me today, with us today. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning.
Walker, we're live streaming on Facebook.
That's correct. We are live streaming on the Today's Issues Facebook page, so you can go there, watch the show, comment on the show. We do read your comments, and speaking of that, on Thursday of this week, just in 2 days, we're going to have a Facebook live event from 11:05 to 11:30 Central. We're going to answer questions live on the show from folks on Facebook.
Ed will be here?
Yes, Ed will be here.
Okay. What about Ray?
Ray will be traveling. Is that right, Ray?
That's right. I'm going to be up in Chicago on Thursday, so Ed's going to fill in for me very ably. Hey, it's very exciting. Facebook live chat. We've never done this before, right?
No, we haven't. By the way, that's Dr. Ray Pritchard, for those who don't know, in Dallas, who's co-hosting with us today. No, we talked about this. We have not done this before, to answer your question, but we talked about doing this because we have so many people who watch on Facebook. So we'll at Thursday, that is 2 days from now, from 11:05 to 11:30, we'll take questions on Facebook and answer them. And they can be whatever you want to ask. Well, within limits. You know, boxers, briefs, things. We're not getting into that, people.
You're not guaranteeing that we're going to answer every question, people.
Right, right.
Type.
But a lot of people have, you know, if you want to ask behind-the-scenes questions or whatever you want to ask about, you can do that. We'll have some fun with that on Thursday. Fred Jackson is in studio with us. Good morning, Fred.
Always good to be here. Nice to have Ray back.
Yeah, Ray, you've been traveling?
I was overseas last week in the Philippines and about 8,500 miles away from Tupelo and teaching the Book of Daniel over there. Great time. I'm glad to be back, but my body is kind of jet-lagged this morning. I feel like I'm somewhere over the Pacific Ocean heading back toward the U.S.
Now, how do you fly from where to where to where?
From Dallas to Hong Kong. That was a 16-hour flight. And then change planes, and then on to Manila, and then 2 hours south of Manila back to the Bible Institute. So only two flights, but that 16-hour flight, that'll break your back.
How far from Hong Kong to the Philippines, to Manila?
That's only about 2 hours. So that's just
really?
A little, yeah.
Okay. It's, the longest flight I've ever been on is 12. And you're just about to go crazy. The last couple of hours, and 16, I can't. I'd have to be sedated. I'm not encouraging that, folks. Believe me, I'm just telling you that would be my, or have some about five great movies.
It feels like the flight will never end,
right.
And there's no place to go when you're 35,000 feet up there.
Do you sleep, Ray? Are you able to sleep?
I slept about 2 hours out of the 16.
Ray, 6'4".
I
aren't
know.
You, Ray?
Yeah, I am. And I was all, I didn't
have
Did
you
have
a first-class seat, or did you fly back there with the cattle?
Me and the cattle.
Oh, my goodness. Listen, were you able to get a seat where you could stretch your legs out?
A little bit. I had a bulkhead, a row by a bulkhead, okay. So a little bit. But, no, it was, I was back there with the herd. In,
well, I tell you, there's some kind of reward for you in heaven for just flying that 16 hours over there and back. Mm-mm-mm. God bless you to teach the Word of God. We're glad to have you home. And by the way, just a quick, you keep hearing stories about Al-Qaeda or ISIS in the Philippines and the Filipino government's fighting radical Islamists. Did that go around you? Was that anywhere near you?
It was not near us, but their president, President Duterte, has taken a tough stand against drugs. And he's a law and order guy. And I was told when I was over there, most of the Filipinos really like him because the drug problem has been out of control. And down there in the island of Mindanao, which is in the south, the Muslim, the radical Islamic terrorists have been pretty active. And he has, you know, he's come pretty close to shutting them down all the way.
Really? So he's a tough guy.
He said last week about the drug dealers. He said, look, I'll shoot them myself.
Wow.
Wow. It's the Donald Trump of the Philippines.
I actually heard that comparison when I was over there.
Wow.
Well, probably without the constitutional constraints that President Trump has to do something like that. But that's interesting. Well, all right, Fred Jackson, what's happening in the news?
Well, let's do some follow-up to our big story from yesterday. We led our news yesterday, obviously, with the special prosecutor counsel Mueller issuing indictments against Paul Manafort and his business associate, Rick Gates. And yesterday in the mainstream media, Manafort being described constantly as the former campaign manager of Donald Trump. Now, their effort in that is to connect it to Manafort and Gates to the alleged Trump collusion with the Russians. Well, the indictments, when you read them all, 12 of them, and our own Abe Hamilton did a great job of going through this yesterday on his program at 5 o'clock, none of these indictments deal at all with Manafort's relationship with Donald Trump. None of them. And the mainstream media subtly realized this a couple of hours later because they actually buried all of this in their stories, but they really liked the indictment and the pleading guilty by George Papadopoulos, who was with the Trump campaign very briefly on, like last March, early on in things. And he was part of, I think it was Trump's, was it Foreign Advisory Committee or something like that. But here's and I was reading a piece by Greg Jarrett this morning on this. He is a legal expert with Fox News. And here's what he had to say. Papadopoulos pled guilty to a single charge of making a false statement to the FBI. He was not charged with so-called collusion because no such crime exists in American statutory law except in antitrust matters. It has no application to elections and political campaigns. And here's what the charge was. He lied in that he did not tell the FBI that he had some contact with a Russian or about the possibility of them digging dirt up about Hillary Clinton. So he was indicted and pled guilty to lying to the FBI. And here's what Jared has to say. To put it plainly, Mueller is tasked with finding a crime that does not exist in the law. And what he's referring to there's no law in the books about collusion when it comes to political matters and political discussions. It is a legal impossibility. He is being asked to do something that is manifestly unattainable. But as I say, the mainstream media yesterday going crazy over this judge, George Papadopoulos pleading guilty on this. There's nothing to it. White House spokesman yesterday, Sarah Sanders, saying he was a volunteer. He wasn't even paid by the Trump campaign. He was a volunteer on this committee for a few months, and that was it. But the mainstream media was trying to latch on to this as proof that there is collusion there between the Trump campaign and the Russians.
So Fred, what does this amount to? I mean, so far, has what happened yesterday, does that advance the story at all? Or is this just an attempt to, is he going to try to flip Manafort or Papadopoulos or the other guy? Is that what's going on here?
If
there's anything to flip him to, that's the thing. But what was not being talked about in the mainstream media is the resignation of Tom Podesta. He is the brother of John Podesta, who was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager. Tom Podesta stepped down from this lobbying group that he's part of because it has been learned that he is under Mueller's microscope as well with regards to the whole investigation of the Russians being involved with the U.S. election last year. But the mainstream media was not talking about that. He resigned yesterday, Tom Podesta, from that lobbying group. Mm-hmm. So on the same day that these indictments came out against Manafort and against Gates. So the speculation is there amongst some is that maybe Mueller has something on Tom Podesta and he was bowing out of his out of the company that he's been working for.
Well, you want to know who else lied under oath? James Comey.
Mm-hmm.
James Comey was asked by a congressman, did you know that you were going to exonerate Hillary Clinton before the end of the investigation? He said no.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. But yet the records show he and his entire team of attorneys prepared a statement exonerating Hillary Clinton months before they even interviewed her in person.
Yes. And they didn't put her under oath when she was interviewed.
Yeah.
That was all a sham. I don't know what the deal was with that. With James Comey, he was highly respected by the FBI agents before he started, apologizing for or, I don't know, exonerating, working for Hillary Clinton Ray. I mean, but the reason I know that is I know someone who was an FBI agent working in the Justice Department for Comey.
Mm-hmm.
Not directly one-on-one, but an agent in the FBI, and he said that Comey was a straight shooter, and that he was highly respected by field agents and so forth, and across political lines. And then when he did that thing for Hillary Clinton, where he said she's done all these terrible things, but I'm not going to recommend an indictment.
Yeah.
And then we learned that in the interview process by the FBI, they after all that we knew about her keeping these State Department, her own private email server, trying to hide it in her bathroom or basement at her home, breaking the law by doing that. And then he said, you know, that's not worthy of even a grand jury investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And then, that just screamed, hey, I'm covering for her politically.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll see what happens with that story, but James. So you're not real high on James Comey, Walker?
He and I aren't on good terms.
Okay.
No,
okay.
I mean, there's documented problems with the FBI and the Justice Department. Some of the officials in there, how they handled things under the previous administration. Most of them, with the exception of Comey, most of them are still there. And I think that's more problematic than
and
what
we have to
said.
Remind people that the special counsel, Robert Mueller, is the former FBI director, and James Comey worked under them.
He was his mentor.
That's right.
Which is really a violation of, as I understand it, it's a violation of, in other words, the star witness, Robert Mueller, in this is James Comey, really.
Mm-hmm.
And James Comey's his pal.
That's right.
Conflict of interest.
Well, you're not supposed to be able to, you know, that's right. You're supposed to have to avoid that, and I guess it doesn't apply here.
And Mueller was the FBI director when Hillary Clinton was giving away, was selling 20% of the U.S. uranium.
Yes.
And then there was the pay-for-play there with some of the lower guys involved in that.
A tangled web.
Well, one guy pled guilty of one charge, and he was let go.
Yes.
When you're looking at this objectively, and granted, I'm a Republican voter most of the time. I think you look at this whole picture and try to be objective about it, what they have on President Trump, I say have in quotations, is pretty pathetic so far. Surely they're going to have to do more, because basically they went fishing and caught a half pound brim here.
Is it likely that Manafort and his buddy were doing something wrong over there with the banks and the money in the Ukraine? Possibly, right? Mm-hmm. And that's very possible. But even if those charges prove true, that has nothing to do with the president, nothing to do with the campaign, nothing to do with Russian collusion. It's zero. So a lot of smoke and mirrors yesterday, but no fire underneath, at least not so far. It's a big zero.
It's a big zero yesterday. But as Greg Jarrett points out again, the big news about collusion is Hillary Clinton and the millions that she spent in the development of this dossier.
Right.
There's collusion for you, because this agency, which was paid millions of dollars by the Hillary Clinton campaign to dig up dirt on Donald Trump and her dealings with the Russians as Secretary of State. Now, you can draw lines there.
Right.
You can draw some firm lines there.
Yeah, and then the donations to the Clinton Foundation, access to Hillary Clinton as she's Secretary of State, and then Bill Clinton getting $500,000 to go speak in Moscow.
You want to talk about dirt.
Well, I mean, you know, all right. those things, if that were Republicans doing that, the Democrats would be going, are you, you know, you have to be blind not to see this. Mm-hmm. And now they're acting like, well, you know, Bill Clinton was vetted by the State Department for his $500,000 speech. Really, he's vetted by the State Department, who's run by who? Yes. Exactly. It was run by his wife. Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. Anyway.
No conflict there.
We'll see. Basically, as far as the collusion accusations against the president and his team, what happened yesterday was much ado about nothing. That's it's right. kind of like, folks, you're asking a guy about whether he robbed the bank, and while you're investigating whether he robbed the bank, you learn that but he robbed a convenience store, you know, 3 years ago, and now you find out he's the one who did it. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. Right.
It's sort of in that way. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman with now that Manafort guy, he may be in trouble though.
Mm-hmm. He did from 2005 to 2015.
Right. He's got legal trouble, but it's not reflective. Involving the White House.
No.
All right, Walker, Tim, and Fred, along with Ray, we appreciate you listening to our program today and are watching on Facebook Live. Today's issues. Go ahead, Fred. Story number two.
1 week from today, we have gubernatorial elections going on in New Jersey and in Virginia. Virginia is the one that's really being watched. Because of term limits, the current governor there, a Democrat, McAuliffe can't run again. And so we have the polls showing very close between the Republican Gillespie and the Democrat there. But our story this morning has to do with an ad campaign going on in connection with that gubernatorial race there. And here's the ad. The ad's being run by a Latino group, a PAC group, that has some affiliation with an actress by the name of Eva Longoria. I know her face, and she's an older actress. But let me describe the ad to you. The ad shows a white man in a pickup truck, and he's got a Confederate flag flying off the back and a Gillespie bumper sticker. And the truck, the driver, is chasing down some kids who are all minority kids. So he's after them. This is what the ad shows. And it's not very subtle at all. This is the race baiting that we have become so sadly familiar with from the Democrats. But it's trying to depict white people with Confederate flags off the back of a pickup truck as being the bad guys, and they're out to get minority kids.
Who paid for this?
This is a PAC. It's a Latino Victory, they're called, but they have an affiliation. It was co-founded by Eva Longoria.
She's the actress.
So, and it's obviously
that's shameful.
It is absolutely shameful.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
You know, I saw the ad, Fred, and I agree with everything that has been said because it's an attempt to paint Gillespie. Mm-hmm. As if not only he's a neo-Confederate, but as if he and his supporters are in pickup trucks trying to run down minorities, hit them, kill them, kidnap them, or something. It's as disgraceful a political ad as you will ever see. I just wonder, you know, there's the old prayer, Lord, let my enemies go too far. I wonder if this may not backfire on the Northam campaign, that undecided voters in Virginia may go, no, that's just too far.
Has the Democrat candidate for governor there, what's the name of the person?
The Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam.
Okay. Has he denounced this ad? Do you know?
I have not read that anywhere. He may have, but I have not read that anywhere as of this morning.
Okay.
You know, if you want to play hardball, if I'm the Republican candidate, I would just do an ad, and this is gruesome, but it's true.
Be careful what you're about to say.
I would do an ad showing an abortion with the Democrat candidate's name on it.
Mm-hmm.
And
Well, that would be real.
And that would be blocked by all, no television station would run that, and no social media giant would run that, because it would violate their, whatever their policy is.
So they would have standards, you're saying. An ad showing an abortion, a real abortion, which would be gruesome, as you said.
That would reflect the Democrats' values.
And say the Democratic candidate for governor supports this procedure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be real, though.
Yes, that would be a factual. And then they could either accept that I'm for abortion or
your point being that the media would reject that outright.
Yes.
Because they would say that's too offensive to air. While at the same time, I guess some media, at least in the state of Virginia, are accepting this slanderous ad against Mr. Gillespie.
Right. Well, let's be very clear about this, and this is being objective. This is part of the playbook of the Democratic Party, both nationally and state. It is.
Yes.
Remember Hillary Clinton, basket of deplorables.
Right.
You know, that phrase. Yeah. Who is she referring to? It's trying to paint, and even in this ad, stoking racial worry in Virginia voters, the ad concludes with a grim warning against Gillespie and Trump, claiming that they are responsible for inciting fear. So there's the added element in this ad of connecting Gillespie to Donald Trump, and according to the mainstream media, those people are all racist.
Have there been a rash of these reported incidents with white men with Confederate flags in trucks running down minority children? Is that going on across
the country? In reality, no.
No. No.
Okay. You can't cite one case?
Not one case.
Huh. Well, then why would you depict something like that if that's not real life?
Because facts don't matter.
Right.
That's right.
It just creates an emotional reaction.
Yeah. Whatever gets people stirred up.
That's right.
Oh. Okay.
And really what's unfortunate
even is... Even if it's a lie.
Yeah, it's a lie. And what's unfortunate is, well, that's what happens when you don't have any moral standards.
Yeah.
You make up your own moral standards. That's acceptable to them.
Yeah.
But what's unfortunate is there might be people in their home in Virginia that don't have time to look up who the candidate Gillespie is, what he stands for. Mm-hmm. They'll take that ad and they'll run with it. They'll say, I would never vote for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's for running over minority children. Yeah.
And then they'll tell their family.
And he'll be doing that as governor.
Yeah,
right. He'll be out there in the governor's leaving the governor's mansion, running down in the governor's motorcade, running down minority children, going to that part of town
and
to find them.
We have the information to discern whether that's true or not, but your average person may not have the time to look that up. They take that commercial for face value.
But how sad that the politics, certainly of that party, has reached down so low.
The Democrat Party. Mm-hmm.
That you would use children also. The ad depicts there's a little black boy. And a little Muslim girl.
Right. So they're walking down the street, and here comes the white supremacist with his Confederate flag in a truck. He's going to try to mow them down, kill them with the truck.
Yep.
And that's being played on TV
in
Virginia?
Mm. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Shame on the TV stations that are running
it's
this.
It's dirty politics at its very worst.
Yeah. Does it say anything about which media are running this and which television stations are running this?
It doesn't.
Maybe people in Virginia can post on our Facebook page if they're seeing this ad on TV.
Yeah.
Surely most respectable television stations would not run an ad like that.
You would think.
Yeah. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. By the way, is anybody who's favored in that race?
Polls are showing neck and neck right now.
Pretty close.
The Democrat was way ahead, but it's drawn really close.
Okay. And the Democrat, Virginia is, historically has been a conservative state, but since Northern Virginia has changed the state, the heavily Democrat, that balances out the central and southern part of the state, which is more conservative. So it's generally a tight race there in a statewide election.
Yep.
We'll be back in 3 minutes with more of Today's Issues on American Family Radio.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III.
It sometimes can sound like you're a voice crying lonely in the wilderness when you adhere to biblical conviction and you stand on God's word and apply to everything. But having such an overwhelming response is heartening.
We'll also hear news headlines and analysis from Fred Jackson and Steve Jordahl. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy here to help you understand God's purpose for your life through the eyes of a layman. The key to be an effective sharer of your faith is to be an effective listener. You have way more knowledge than the person you're talking with needs to know to come to Christ. And by asking lots of questions, you'll know what they need to know. It's not how much you say, but what you say that touches people's hearts. This is not a sales presentation where you follow a script. It's the love of God flowing through you to the heart of people's needs with the guidance of the Holy Spirit. You'll never go wrong following His lead. It may be a cup of cold water in Jesus' name and nothing more that opens the door to future conversations. Never in a rush, motivated by love and focused on the need, there's nothing more rewarding than sharing God's love with the lost. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of your church by moving everyone every day closer to Jesus. For help doing that, go to ROTW.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
From director Kevin Sorbo and executive producer Sean Hannity comes Let There Be Light. Saul Harkins is a man who has turned away from God, but a near-fatal car crash gives him one last chance to renew his life, his family, and his faith. Let There Be Light, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. Now playing. More information is available at LetThereBeLightMovie.com.
Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. Episcopalians have been worshiping at Christ Church in Alexandria, Virginia since 1773. It's where George Washington worshiped. So did Robert E. Lee. Mrs. Lee gifted the church $10,000 to help start the congregation's endowment. In 1870, two small plaques were attached to the altar inside the sanctuary, commemorating both men. But the other day, church leaders decided the names must come down. They said the plaques made some worshipers feel unsafe and unwelcome. President Washington once owned slaves, and General Lee, well, you know all about that controversy. So the church decided to whitewash its history by literally whitewashing it. Cultural jihad, if you will. There's a large banner inside the church house. It reads, "All are welcome, no exceptions," except for George Washington and Robert E. Lee and anyone else they deem unsuitable. Christ Church doesn't sound very Christ-like to me. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Well, we were talking about this television ad that's being run in Virginia where it's having to do with the gubernatorial race there, and a group called Latino Victory, which I guess is a far-left group, obviously. They have a television ad, which I have not seen, and it shows a white man in a pickup truck with a Confederate flag
and a Gillespie bumper
waving sticker on the back, and a Ed Gillespie or Gillespie for Governor bumper sticker. And there's a gubernatorial race going on there, if you don't know, folks, if you don't live in Virginia. And so it shows this man trying to run down minority children, a Muslim girl and a black boy that looked to be about 11, 12, 13 years of age. So the idea is that if a Republican is elected governor there, he will try to kill minority children. That's basically what they're saying. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to scare the mess out of the minority community, I guess, in Virginia. You know, what if you had done an ad? By the way, Ray is with us. Ray Pritchard's with us today, and Sandy's about to join us momentarily. Ray Pritchard, Ed Walker, and Tim. What if you'd done an ad depicting a Muslim about to blow up a building?
Oh, brother.
Okay.
Wow.
If that had been an ad on the right. back of the on the bumper sticker, you had what's the Democrat's name?
Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam.
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 What if you had Northam for governor on the back of the bumper sticker of a car that's about to commit jihad and blow himself up in a, you know, in a heavily populated area? I wonder if that would have been acceptable Ray. What do you think?
No. No, that'd be racism, that'd bigotry, racism, Tim.
Why, you mean you'd be stereotyping people?
That's exactly right. You'd be
You can stereotype white males.
That's exactly right, especially Southern white males.
Southern white males, you can stereotype with impunity. So you make Mr. Gillespie, this case, you're making Mr. Gillespie's supporters seem like they're just rabid racist bigots who want to kill children.
Yep.
You don't know who's funding that ad?
Latino Victory. What they call themselves.
But according to the FEC, George Soros gave them $150,000.
Oh.
At the beginning of October.
Now that's a shock.
Yeah.
Well, and you got this Hollywood actress who's involved in it too, Eva Longoria.
Yeah.
But anyway, well, Sandy Rios joins us on Tuesdays, most Tuesdays. She's available to join us. She has her own program, of course, on AFR each Monday through Friday called Sandy Rios in the Morning from 7:05 to 8 o'clock Central Time. Here on American Family Radio. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, Tim, and everybody.
Hey, did you hear about this ad?
Oh, yes. Yep. You know, the other part of it is that truck, the license plate is a Don't Tread on Me flag.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is it? Okay,
so
Tea
it's
Party.
Don't Tread on Me with an Ed Gillespie bumper sticker.
Is that? Yeah. I don't live in Virginia, so I don't know. Is this really being run on television stations, or is this something just internet-based?
Oh, no, it really is. And the left thinks it's just fine. They're accusing Ed Gillespie of being a racist because he's running ads about MS-13. And they say that he's accusing all immigrants of being associated with MS-13. That's
which is
their
a gang.
Yeah, it's a Central American murderous, horrible gang. It's ridiculous, and Ed hasn't done anything like that. Ed Gillespie is not great on immigration, by the way, so it's ironic that he should be targeted like this. Of course, truth does not need to apply in these ads.
You know, Sandy, why do you think, maybe this is a duh question, but why do you think the Democrats are constantly trying to play the race card? By the Democrats' definition of a conservative, and I've been a conservative my whole life, and I know a lot of conservatives, I don't know anybody, honest to goodness, I don't know anybody who thinks in a racially motivated manner. It's all, the politics of conservatism comes from principles that are constitutional, that you can support with the Bible, and that have nothing to do with people's skin color. But yet, the left always wants to say, you know, we're haters or we're bigots or we're racist. Or in this case, we're, in Mr. Gillespie, conservatives or Tea Party people are want to murder minority children. What are they? Why can't they fight on ideas? I guess is what I'm asking. Sandy.
Well, you just answered your own question, really. But let me go back a long way.
Okay.
You know, when you study the history, and this will make sense in a second, of Mao Zedong, who became the murderous dictator of China, who, you know, brought China into communism and killed millions of his own people, as most communist dictators do. He first, when he was just a citizen of China, went to Europe to study with the European communists. And you can read it in the biography of Mao that one of the things he learned was dividing people. It was pitting people against each other. Union workers against owners. Anywhere you could find a grievance, go in there and put salt on it, agitate. That's community organizing. It's not. It's really the opposite. It's to divide people. If they have a grievance, to stir it up, pit people against each other. And the object is that when people then are pitted against each other and the strife becomes great, then you can come in as the champion and, you know, you can offer, be the savior and offer leadership. But of course, it doesn't happen that way. At least it didn't work very well in China, and it hasn't worked very, very well in the countries that adopted communism, in whether it's Russia or the other countries. But it's a communist tactic, and it was used by Saul Alinsky, and now it's being used by the left.
Mm. Gee, it sounds like also the modus operandi for Barack Obama and Eric Holder. whole 8 years they were there.
Yes. It started remember when Eric Holder made that famous speech when I think it was the first time he spoke publicly after becoming attorney general, and he talked about racism. You know, we have a race problem. And do you guys remember thinking, what's he talking about? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the subject matter. When I was a kid, it was real and powerful, and people I knew were racist, some that I knew, some of my own family, not immediate, but you know, I heard a lot of bad things, and I used to travel to the South. My sister lived in Atlanta. I knew all about that. It was real. But I thought, it wasn't my experience when Barack Obama was elected that we were, you know, in some sort of a race war, that we had a real race problem. But Eric Holder thought so. And so they have really, in their period, during their stewardship, they did everything they could to stoke the fires of racism. And they've done a great job.
Yeah. You know, twice elected African-American president, I might add. Mm-hmm. President Obama, that's, for a racist country, that's pretty contradictory, I guess. Because this thing with the left and this mischaracterization of people intentionally trying to smear them, Mr. Gillespie, I mean, you can almost file, I don't know if it'd work or not, a libel suit against whoever, this Latino George. So you're telling me, Walker, you found out George Soros gave him?
If you go to the FEC website, Federal Election Commission, you can search up these PACs, the Latino Victory Fund.
Yeah.
And then on that PAC page, you can see who gives them money.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, George Soros has given them money.
Yeah. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. This is Reformation Day. I want to change the subject now. This is Reformation Day, right, Sandy?
Yes, sir.
Okay, now you, and I want Ray to comment on this too, because Ray studied this obviously a lot, being a Bible teacher for many years and a church historian. But you, Sandy, if I remember correctly, you went on a trip a few years ago. Was it a Reformation tour or something like that?
Yes, Bruce and I went to Rome, and then we went to Geneva, we went to Germany, to Wittenberg, and to the Würzburg Castle, and Berlin. We traced Berlin wasn't part of Berlin, just happened to be in the course of things, but Martin Luther wasn't in Berlin as far as I know, but it was a Reformation tour. And of course, we couldn't begin to touch all the countries that had been touched by the discovery that Martin Luther made in Romans, that we are saved by grace, that God gives us righteousness as a gift because we can't earn it, changes our whole perspective. And he exposed the apostasy of the Catholic Church then, selling God's forgiveness through indulgences, which is not possible. So, yes, we went on that tour with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, pastor emeritus now of a Moody Church. And it was, you know what, Tim, that was right after I started working here.
Mm-hmm.
I had already planned the trip. And so I think I started here in April and then went on the trip, I think, in June.
Yeah. Hey, Ray, was the printing press invented before or after the Reformation?
It was invented in the century before the Reformation, and there's a huge connection between Gutenberg and Luther, not so much in theology, but in technology. You can make the argument, and I'm sure it's true, that without movable type printing that Gutenberg brought to the fore, the message of the Reformation probably would have been stillborn. But because there was movable type printing in Northern Europe, Luther posted those 95 theses on the door of the Wittenberg Church, which, by the way, was 500 years ago today. And, you know, it's very true. I mean, Dr. Lutzer points this out in his book, Rescuing the Gospel, that Luther intended to reform the church. He wasn't thinking on that day, I'm going to start a movement that's going to change the world. But what he did on that day, and because of the printing press getting the word out, he rescued the gospel of grace from those who said you could buy it, you could sell it, or you could somehow be good enough to earn your way to heaven. He established the principle, which is biblical. It's by grace alone, through faith alone, in Christ alone.
Hmm. You know, Ray and Sandy, on this, it is amazing to me the scripture is so clear that salvation is by grace through faith alone. How do we get from that point in the first, second century where the early believers understood that, obviously. How do we get to that point? That was over, 1,000 years or so. How do we get to that point where a guy like Martin Luther had to come along to try to correct what was being taught.
Well, let me give my layman's stab at it, then we'll let the pastor speak.
Okay.
You know, I think part of it is because for whatever reason, mankind, in religious systems always gravitate to, if I do this, say this, look this way, dress this way, bow this way, I can be saved. Men always are more comfortable with outward things because even though they may seem like a pain, they're easier than the surrender of the total mind, body, spirit, everything to the Lordship of Christ. That's tough. And I think men always gravitate to external things, and I don't have to mess with the inside. I can think and do what I want inside, but as long as I conform on the outside. I just think that's human. I think that's what happens every century.
Well, Sandy, you're exactly right, and that beautifully said. You quoted that the just shall live by faith, which was the hallmark of the Reformation. I think today, in the 21st century, but I think it was true, Fred, going back to the beginning, there is no doctrine that is more difficult to accept than the doctrine of the free grace of God. It's a counterintuitive doctrine because it says two things that no man or woman wants to really accept. Number one, that you are so bad off, you are so far gone in sin, you are so dead in sin, there is not one single thing you can do to save yourself. Number two, it says, and this was Luther's big point, because man is so sinful, if God doesn't step in and do something, we are all going to go down together. Luther said, all of humanity is in the same boat, and the boat has sprung a big leak, and it is going down. And if God doesn't do something, we're all going to perish together. And so the movement is always, Fred, not toward God's grace, but human nature rebels against grace because we want to admit how bad off we are, and therefore, if God doesn't save us, we will never be saved. And Luther said, no, that's the only way it could be. It's grace alone. It starts with God and comes down to us. It's not about how good we can be, because nobody can ever be good enough.
Now, Martin Luther was a Catholic priest, right?
It was an Augustinian monk. He was a loyal son of the church. And it's, you know, Tim, it's quite true. When he nailed those theses on the door, what he did by doing it, he wanted to provoke theological debate. It would be like posting something on the internet today to get some back and forth going. He wasn't thinking, I'm going to change the world. But that's what happened.
But who was he speaking to with the thesis? Sandy, go ahead. Who was he speaking to?
Well, let me just say, I did not know this until I heard Dr. Lutzer say it on Sunday. I heard him preach in Chicago. This little detail, he said that he posted the 95 theses in Latin because he was trying to reach the priests. He really wasn't doing that for the common people. He didn't, because the common people couldn't speak Latin. It was translated then, and then distributed through the Gutenberg Press, as Ray has just described. And also, well, let me add one more thing, because I think this is important. You know, Luther, as he developed his own, as things progressed, he started, of course, writing a lot more, and the German people were able to read what he was saying. But when he was arrested and he thought he was going to die, the Prince Elector, whatever his name was, Elector something, Frederick, who was kind of his protector, had him kidnapped, and he was taken to Würzburg Castle, where he remained in solitude for a long time. Not years, but months. And during that time, Tim, a very short period of time, he actually translated the Latin Vulgate Bible into German. And then the Gutenberg Press was available, and it was translated into German. So for the first time in centuries, the people had a way to read the Bible themselves. Luther did that in an incredibly short period of time, wrote tons of hymns, including A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, and introduced singing into churches. Churches, did, you know, they sang the chant. The monks sang the chant. The people didn't sing in worship. Luther changed all of that.
Would you say, Sandy and Ray, get your thoughts on this too? We're talking to Sandy Rios, by the way, and I'm Tim with Walker and Fred in studio. Ray's in Dallas, Ray Pritchard, and we're talking about today is Reformation Day. 500 years ago today was when Martin Luther posted how many? 99, wasn't it?
95
thesis on the wall at the Wittenberg Church in Germany. And I want to ask you, Sandy, this is a subjective question and get Ray's thoughts on this. But would you say that in the last 1,000 years that Martin Luther would rate as a top 10 person in terms of influence on human history?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. Because, Tim, when you trace the effect of the Reformation on the world, it spread to Scotland. It spread through, help me, Ray.
Ireland?
Scotland, no. But I was trying to think of the person in Scotland, the Presbyterian Church. John Knox, yes,
John
thank
Knox.
You. Thank you. It spread into Geneva through the teaching of John Knox and others, and it spread like wildfire into England. King Henry VIII was grappling, and the Church of England, of course, came out for other reasons. It's more complex than that. And then, but out of that came the movement that produced the Pilgrims,
right?
That produced the Moravians, who were passionate about Scripture and about the priesthood of the believer, that they were personally responsible for holiness. And it was out of that that they came to the New World. And it's out of that that we had our Plymouth, you know, the words. What was the thing that the 1620, the Plymouth, when they landed in the Mayflower Compact?
Mayflower Compact.
Yes,
right.
Sorry. Thank you.
We're all stuck there.
Yes, I need help. So the foundations of this country are intrinsically traced to the work of Martin Luther.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to talk about what America has done in the world to explain.
Let me ask you one other question. Ray, I'll ask you a question. I guess I don't mean this question to be controversial, so if you want to take the Fifth Amendment, Ray, go ahead and do it. And I mean no disrespect whatsoever to our Catholic friends who listen to this program. But still, I have to ask, Ray, it seems to me that America was birthed primarily from Protestants, right?
Well, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
And had it, which was different, let's say, from some South America or Central American countries, which are basically based on the heavy influence of Catholicism. True?
True.
There's a difference. Seems to me that Protestantism favors more what?
Free market economy.
Okay, go ahead and talk about that.
Libertarian democracy, voting for your leaders. I mean, Sandy said it very eloquently. Before Luther, truth, i.e. the scriptures, it was there. The Bible was always there, but it was in the hands of the church. It was in the hands of the Pope and the cardinals and the priests, and the average person couldn't read Latin. Mm-hmm. So what Luther did, you could argue that the most revolutionary thing Luther did was not the 95 Theses. It's what Sandy said, translating the scriptures into the vernacular, into German, and so that everyday ordinary people who weren't learned scholars, suddenly they could read Mark. I mean, it's hard for us to understand today in the 21st century, how many versions of the Bible are there in English? I don't know, but there are tons, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy to get the Bible today in say the Western world. Back then, before Luther, the average person had never read John for himself or herself, never read Revelation, never read Genesis. It wasn't possible. It had to, you know, the Bible chained to the pulpit, the priest would read it. So Luther, he unleashed a revolution of freedom when he put the word of God into the hands of ordinary people. And that led directly to great scientific advances and led directly to, as Sandy said, the development of free market capitalism and the democratic idea that the people should choose their own leaders.
Which birthed America.
That which birthed our nation.
Yeah.
That's right.
Sandy, last question for you and then I'll let you go here. What's the best book on the Reformation and or Martin Luther you could recommend to our listeners? You mentioned Dr. Lutzer's book.
Yes, Dr. Lutzer's book, which helped me, Ray, the title.
Rescuing the Gospel.
Thank you, Rescuing the Gospel. And that's an easy read. It's a short book. Now, there's a new one out by Eric Metaxas, which is a biography of Martin Luther that I would also recommend if you want more. Of course, Eric's style of writing is different than Dr. Lutzer's. Both of them excellent. Both of them trustworthy. So that's the two.
Yeah. Thank you, Sandy. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Okay, take
that's
care.
Sandy Rios joining us. If you want to hear Sandy's show, then tune in at 7:05 Central Time each weekday morning here on American Family Radio, and you will hear Sandy cover the news of the day. from a biblical worldview perspective, and the show's called Sandy Rios, R-I-O-S, Sandy Rios in the Morning. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Ray, you want to? Would you recommend? I guess obviously you'd recommend the same.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I mean, there's a lot of learned books out there that you get lost in the footnotes. But Erwin Lutzer's book, Rescuing the Gospel, and Eric Metaxas' brand new biography of Luther. If you got those two books, it would give you the foundation to know what this day is all about. And by the way, Tim, just circling back around, you ask how important Luther is in the last 1,000 years. Well, at the turn of the century, A&E, hardly a conservative Christian outlet, A&E, the network, and their program biography, they came out with a list of the 100 most important people of the last 1,000 years. Very interesting. Number one was Johann Gutenberg, most important person. Second was Newton, Isaac Newton, law of gravity. Third was Martin Luther, and he came in right ahead of number four, Charles Darwin, number five, William Shakespeare, number six, Christopher Columbus. So that tells you, really, between Gutenberg at number one made possible Luther coming in at number three.
By the
three.
Way, where is George Washington on that list?
Let me
Do
look.
You know? Because I would say he at least has to be top 10.
I'm looking down here. Okay. They've got Thomas Jefferson at number 15. George Washington came in at number 21, just ahead of Genghis Khan.
Well, I beg to differ on that one, but I respect that list. That's a great list, A&E, of the last. It was a turn of the century, millennium.
That's right, turn of the millennium. Right.
That they reflected back on the most influential people of the last 1,000 years. Without General George Washington, there would be no America.
That's
You could argue other things that there would be no America, but if you ever read the life and times of George Washington and the things that that he was brought through, which were absolutely miraculous, one after another, it's fascinating to read about the life of George Washington. He called himself, his life, providential. Yes. Did Washington. Yes. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We're just about out of time for this hour. Fred, if people want to keep up with the news of the day, other than listening to AFR, we have a new service, don't we?
Yeah, a new service, online news service. It's called onenewsnow.com, onenewsnow, onenewsnow.com. You can go there and you get the latest news of the day. You'll get Reformation stories today, folks, if you want some background on that. We've had our reporters doing some special stories, special coverage of that today. Obviously, the political stories we've been dealing with and the followed over that. So there you have the up-to-date news of what's going on in your world today, plus a lot of other features with regards to legal aspects affecting Christians. Yesterday we talked to our reporter Charlie Butts, who does pro-life stories, what's going on with regards to the fight against abortion, which continues. So you'll find all of those stories there on a daily basis. And here's a real neat thing, a real neat aspect of onenewsnow.com. Go up to the right-hand side of the site, and you can sign up for a daily email. We'll send it to you. We'll send you a daily email with all the top stories of that day. That'll come to you, no charge to you, one email a day. We don't constantly send you breaking news, breaking news, breaking news. That just pesters people. We just give you one email a day, and you can get all the latest news.
Fox News will give you a breaking news sound if Sean Hannity sneezes. You talk about overuse of everything. I used to pay attention to that, Fox News alert. Now it's every – I love Fox News for the most part, but my word, they wear that out.
They do.
It's lost its impact. We shall take a break for news and information, speaking of news, and be back in 5 minutes with more of Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.